BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Listen to these people. You see them every day, at the bus stop, your post office, in a cafe. They also just so happen to have dementia.
I was 54 at the time. I was an accountant by trade. I had my own business. And of course, this dementia took all that away from me.
When I was told I had dementia, it was a real shock because I thought it was only older people. It was like hitting a brick wall.
I find it difficult to do anything when there's a lot of noise, so I have to do things on my own. Otherwise, I cannot focus on it. I've lost the ability to be able to process other things out because I'm having to work so hard to process what I'm doing.
A mum, a grandparent, a friend, neighbour, everyone knows someone affected. My own aunt had it and died in lockdown. Now, my uncle's in the later stages. There are no effective treatments to prevent, cure, or even slow the progression of the illness. A disease that's cruel and unrelenting, it slowly forces its victims to surrender normal life. But there's one thing, though, that most prize above all else: their dignity. So what happens when that's taken away?
The lounge curtains were still open. Big, full picture window. I was just totally, I can't explain how I felt. I said, you have just put my mum on that commode with the curtains wide open. Why didn't you close? I would have thought that closing the curtains would have showed some respect for dignity, wouldn't you?
I don't really know how to put it into words about the dignity of care. I just feel like she didn't have that dignity in the end, or wasn't allowed to be given that dignity, which she should have been able to. With a lot of dementia patients, I think they just fade away and appear to be insignificant when they're not.
People living with dementia occupy a quarter of all beds in acute hospital settings. But Farlam 4 can reveal how continence care has in many cases been forgotten. Patients left to wet and soil themselves unattended.
There's a reluctance to allow people to just walk freely to the toilet. And very often pads are used in a way to be perhaps more convenient. But in my view, there's no real excuse for that. I feel very strongly that patients should be allowed to walk to the toilet if they can, when they request to go.
We'll hear how a hospital stay can trigger a downward spiral. Previously independent and continent, some are irreversibly losing control of their bodies, their dignity, and their identity.
It's not just poor organisation, and it's not just lack of training in the staff. It's something that allows people to have a culture where they expect no better and where they don't try to make sure that these things never happen.
And the devastating impact this lack of basic care has not just on those living with dementia, but their loved ones too.
I feel I fail at everything. I'm not good enough for Dad, I'm not good enough for Mum, I'm not good enough for my son. Yeah, I'm just failing at everything. That's how I see it. But there is no time. And there's no help. And you have to constantly respond to the one screaming the most. I love them to the moon and back. And I will do this all the time I've got breath in my body.
Right, you ready? A box of biscuits.
A box of biscuits.
A box of mixed biscuits.
Biscuits.
This is Violet and her daughter Heather practicing some tongue twisters a couple of years ago.
A box of mixed biscuits.
A box of biscuits. Mixed.
My mum was a craft teacher and dressmaker. She learned her trade early on as a tailor's assistant. My mum used to make all the dresses for the dance classes, and she was very much involved in my childhood as well.
Violet found out she had dementia in 2019 when she was 89. Then, last May, she fell at home. Complaining of sharp pains in her knee and leg, she was taken to Tameside Hospital in Greater Manchester.
They asked me if I wanted to take in a change of clothes and anything else, you know, like the toiletries. And I put a couple of magazines in, and then I put a card in just explaining that we were all thinking of her and that, you know, she'd be home soon and I would try and visit as soon as I could if they would allow me to visit.
A few days later, some good news. Violet was told she could go home and Heather went to the hospital to collect her.
And when I got the bag, it was exactly as I'd packed it. Nobody had shown her the bag, the toiletries, the card, the clothes. It was just as I'd sent it, which was really disappointing. It was a hot summer day and they discharged her in her pyjamas, basically. So, she didn't have a bra on, which I think she'd have been horrified to know that she was sat there like that. And I mean, although somebody gets dementia, they are still the same person.
But much worse was to come. When Violet continued to complain of pain in her leg, Heather took her back to hospital, where this time they discovered it was fractured. She was transferred from A&E to the hospital's Stamford unit. Several days later, Heather went to visit, and what she found appalled her.
I took her false teeth out, and it was like about 3 or 4 millimetres of green lime sludge. Nobody had taken her false teeth out at all. And her mouth had got all the white bits on her tongue. She'd got thrush on her tongue and the back of her throat.
On another visit, Heather found her mum in bed, her groin inflamed with a rash stretching to her stomach.
The bed was soaked in urine. The incontinence pad between her legs was also soaked in urine. She wasn't wearing any underwear, no, with the door wide open, no underwear on. They said that they had taken, not put underwear on because they wanted the area to air, which I can understand that, but surely you need to be washed first as well. She had thrush in her vagina, thrush in her throat. She'd already got a fracture. It was just like a catalogue of different things.
That must have been incredibly, incredibly upsetting for you to see, and also really upsetting for your mum as well.
Well, yeah, it was very upsetting because it was a mixed ward as well. I mean, there were other people in there that could have been walking up and down, seeing her with the door wide open as well. You know, and my mum, she was a very proud woman. She wouldn't have been wanted to be seen like that at all.
During the last month of her life, her health deteriorated rapidly and she died last July.
Whilst I didn't expect my mum to live forever, I didn't expect the last 2 months of her life to be treated like this.
Tameside and Glossop Integrated Care NHS Foundation Trust has admitted the care it provided for Violet fell below the standard it would expect and could have been improved. Heather says her mum's dignity could have and should have been preserved, that such a proud and dignified woman deserved so much better. Whilst we've been making this programme, I've spoken to many healthcare providers, academics, doctors, nurses, patients and their families. And every single one of them says that the one most important thing that a person suffering from dementia can hold on to is their self-respect. It's crucial in enabling them to manage the illness as best they can. Just listen to George, Teresa and Masood.
Dignity is very much about me remaining me and being treated as me as opposed to a stereotype. To be addressed as an individual, me, not as a sort of nuisance or something.
They can make that difference of how they feel because I'm somebody's mother, I'm somebody's grandmother, I'm still me, I'm a person.
Dignity, respect, even the place that you have in the community and within your friends is going to be damaged in one form or another. And you might actually feel that you're either ignored or you're not part of the community no more, you're not part of that gang. It does affect you.
At the heart of this is going to the toilet when you need to. But Phylon 4 has learned that far from being enabled, patients in hospitals are actively discouraged, often prevented from going to the loo, even when they're fully continent and mobile.
People with dementia were very distressed about not having access to the bathroom. It was something that was a very real concern to them. Just that feeling of urgency and wanting to go to the bathroom was something that they worried about a lot during their admission.
Dr. Katie Featherston is Professor of Sociology and Medicine at the University of West London. She and her team spent a year observing the hidden world of continence care in three hospitals in England and Wales. They shadowed staff around the clock as they cared for patients with dementia.
We identified what we call pad cultures, the everyday use of continence pads in the care of all people living with dementia, regardless of their continence, but also regardless of their independence, as a standard practice.
So when you say regardless of their continence, do you mean even if they could go to the toilet, they were put into these pads?
Absolutely. It was a routine practice to place all people living with dementia in continence pads. And in some wards, this extended to other groups of older people as well.
What do you mean by pads? Can you describe them? Are we talking things like nappies here?
They're large, bulky, wraparound pads. They are held in place with mesh pants. They're large, they make walking difficult, and the person needs to wear institutional gowns to wear these because they can't be contained. You can't wear ordinary clothes over these.
According to the best practice guidance laid out by NHS England, pads should never be the first option if someone is capable of using the toilet. But even when this does happen, dementia sufferers and their families can be powerless to prevent it.
This is an album of my mum and dad. Mum is a young girl.
Oh, so how old is she here?
I think she's about 14 there, this one here.
Sister Susan and Janine are looking back at photos of their mum, Bessie, in happier times. Born and raised in Hart Hill, an agricultural village just outside Sheffield, Bessie never wanted to leave the area, choosing to marry and raise her daughters there.
She was a very good mum. She was very loving, very caring. She always worked while we were growing up, doing little jobs, because money was quite short. So she worked in a pub cleaning for a while, and then for many years she was a school dinner lady at the school that I went to.
She always supported my dad in what he did. They played bowls together, they did lots of dancing together. They loved their holidays. They were always going on holiday. They saved up all year, and that was the main thing, was to go on holiday. And we always had some fabulous holidays as children.
In 2017, when Bessie was 84, she was diagnosed with dementia. 2 years later, she was taken to Rotherham Hospital after a fall at home. Before she went in, Susan and Janine say their mother was able to use the loo when she needed to, but there was no continence assessment when she was admitted. Instead, the hospital labelled Bessie as incontinent, and unbeknown to her daughters, she was forced to wear pads.
Mum was quite often getting distressed because she wanted to go to the toilet, so she shouted for the nurse, but nobody came. At this particular time, I had to go and find a nurse to come. I said, Mum really needs to go to the toilet. There was no quick response. I thought, if she has had an accident at this point, that's not her fault and that's not incontinence. And that happened. That happened more than once. There was no way that my mum would soil herself. She knew what she was doing. I said this, she would make a fuss. If you want to go to the toilet, and if you don't respond in time, she's going to get distressed and she's going to shout for someone to come.
When it was time for Bessie to leave hospital, Susan and Janine wanted their mum to go into a care home. She had become increasingly frail and they worried she may fall again on her way to the toilet. But social services and the hospital said she should return home and that part-time carers would help her manage with a commode and incontinence pads. Janine remembers Bessie's first night back. It didn't go well.
They sat on it. And the lounge curtains were still open. Big, full picture window. I was just totally, I can't explain how I felt. I said, you have just put my mum on that commode with the curtains wide open. Why didn't you close them? At which point they closed them. I would have thought that closing the curtains would have showed some respect for dignity. Wouldn't you?
There's almost an assumption that because she's got dementia, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
You can just treat people how you want to treat them, and it doesn't matter. Because they've got dementia, they won't be bothered about their own dignity. And that wasn't the case with Mum. She had quite advanced dementia by this time, but she still had her dignity.
Tragically, Susan and Janine's concerns about their mum's frailty were soon realised. One evening, after the carers had gone home, Bessie fell. Susan and Janine believed she was trying to get to the toilet. She was taken to hospital and died 2 weeks later from an infection. Had she been in a care home with round-the-clock assistance, as her daughters wanted, things could have turned out very differently.
The main consequence is that possibly her life was shortened.
And her quality of life.
And her quality of life was shortened.
At the end, could have been better.
Could have been better.
Definitely. And the fact that she needed to be treated with more dignity and more respect than she was, really.
It makes me a bit cross, a bit angry, you know, that we weren't believed. It was almost like, you know, we didn't know our mum. And I feel very disappointed. I felt very disappointed that we weren't believed, and that she had to suffer because we weren't believed.
Susan and Janine complained to the local government and social care ombudsman. It found that the trust was at fault for not carrying out a continence assessment on Bessie. Rotherham NHS Trust have apologised to her family and say they have since improved patient care. So why wasn't Bessie properly assessed? After all, she was in hospital, the very place where she and her family felt she would be safe and her needs would be met. Katie Featherston, the doctor whose team monitored the treatment of patients with dementia, says Bessie's story is very familiar.
All the staff talked to us about continence care and talked about really not feeling able to give the high quality care they really wanted to give. They described this as a workaround, a way to manage busy shifts and the timetables of care.
What were the examples of good care that you saw?
We saw some great care of staff really focusing on the person and the individual. So even though we found lots of amazing staff really focusing on continence care and supporting independence, that was something that could be quickly frowned upon by the wider context of the organisation. It was, you know, to focus on continence or independence of the person with dementia could mean that actually that has knock-on effects for other things in the ward. So that could be frowned upon.
Karen Logan is a consultant nurse in South Wales who's been collaborating with Katie on her findings to help improve continence care in her own hospital.
We've always had anecdotal information that there was an issue on the wards with the management of incontinence, and we did have some suspicions that there was an overuse of incontinence pads.
Karen says we shouldn't be surprised.
Managing episodes of incontinence is actually quite stressful for nurses and healthcare support workers. You know, it is considered not a very nice job, if you like, a dirty job, quite a heavy job. And staff feel alone, I think, and unsupported in this. I think what worries me is managing toileting with privacy and dignity and managing incontinence is often invisible. It's hidden care on wards, but it's actually quite important work that doesn't get enough recognition and enough attention.
The problem, she says, is down to a lack of training for nursing staff. It's simply never been made a priority.
Continence and incontinence is really a Cinderella subject. My service, continence, bladder and bowel service, they're Cinderella services, there's no doubt about that. These are not sexy subjects to talk about. They're not sexy subjects that get a lot of resource or money. But I think what Katie's research and her report has done has really sort of shine a light on what we need to do now, what the real problems are, and to listen to the nurses in terms of what they need, and also listen to the patients and the families.
Being forced to wear pads and prevented from using the toilet isn't just confusing and upsetting for someone with dementia. It can lead to much bigger problems for dementia sufferers and their carers.
Are you all right, Mummy?
Yeah, you okay?
Yeah, I was just making sure he feels better.
Who?
Me.
Are you feeling better?
Yeah.
What, better than yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. You do seem better.
Yeah.
That's good. It means I can get some sleep tonight.
Yeah.
This is Mac. She's a full-time carer for her mum and dad, who both have dementia.
Want to make a cake later?
Yeah.
Shall I make it and you decorate it? Because I'm rubbish at decorating them.
Yeah, I'll decorate it.
Excellent.
What are we going to do?
Chocolate. Did you like the chocolate fudge one?
Yes.
Excellent.
Mac's dad, Michael, started working when he was 14 and eventually became a hugely respected figure in the field of avionics. Soon after he retired, though, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
If you're not very well, if you've got an infection, all your symptoms get worse.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, like with Mummy. Can you imagine Mummy in hospital?
No.
Not at all.
Last year, he was admitted to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn with a urinary infection. Mac says when he went in, he was fully continent.
Before Dad went into hospital last year, yes, he had advanced Parkinson's. But he had mobility. He had the ability to move himself. With supervision, obviously, because he's got Parkinson's. He's quite frail. What happened to Dad when he was in hospital was they did not get him up once. Until they knew he was 24 hours away from being discharged. It was already too late. He lost mobility.
Mac says her dad was put into pads as soon as he'd entered hospital, and that railings were put up around the bed to stop him from falling. The effect, she says, caused his body to seize up, and he lost what little mobility he had left. He also lost control of his bowel and bladder movements.
He was actually pooing himself in the pads that they put him in.
Did you spot this straight away? Did
yeah,
you say
I know exactly what happened. Because when they said to me, he's coming home in pads, he's now doubly incontinent, I went, no, he wasn't. Because Dad would always say, I need to go. Right, OK. He'd get up, I'd walk behind him, he'd go in the bathroom. Yes, he might have needed help cleaning himself, but he did not have a problem knowing when he needed to go to the toilet. My dad is now in a position where he doesn't want visitors because he doesn't know if he's going to mess himself.
Since his return from hospital, Michael spends all of his time trapped in the living room. That's where he eats, sleeps, and goes to the toilet. Mac washes him there too. She says his double incontinence has left him feeling ashamed and isolated.
Is he the same man he was? No. And all you ever get out of Dad is, I'm really sorry, I'm really sorry, you shouldn't have to do this, I'm really sorry. It's demeaning. My dad is the most honourable man you've ever come across. He is a true gentleman. I'm not sure I could be that gracious. Sitting in a room, somebody comes to visit, and then all of a sudden the room is filled with a horrendous smell, and he's sitting there knowing there's nothing he could do about it. That's dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. If my dad had not had that stay in that hospital, my dad would not be using nappies. There is no doubt in my mind about that, none whatsoever.
The hospital Michael went to, the Queen Elizabeth King's Lynn, has apologised for the way he was treated and says staff have had more training. However, Dr. Katie Featherston's research reveals that Michael's story is far from unusual.
We do know that a lot of people living with dementia who go into hospital continent leave the hospital with incontinence. So just wearing a pad and those practices surrounding it can mean that people start to lose their continence. And that can have real implications for people later on. It might be difficult for families to care for somebody if they have to care for incontinence as well. And it might mean that people are institutionalised.
What do you mean by institutionalised?
They might have to move to a care home or longer term care.
So going into hospital and being placed in these pads and coming out incontinent can actually be a real trigger for someone's life then changing once they leave hospital.
Absolutely.
Mac is one of those carers left trying to cope with the fallout. She's now looking after her dad in ways she never expected to.
Emotionally, for me, it's tough. I am now seeing parts of my dad's anatomy that I never thought I would see, let alone have to clean, wipe, God help me, cream, and put a nappy on. That, I'll be really honest with you, the first time I had to do it, I walked round and round the living room, psyching myself up, thinking, my God, I wish I'd drink. You know, please God, give me a scotch, because I'm about to see my dad's bum and my dad's penis and his testicles, and I'm not sure how one deals with this. Yeah, so that was about 5 minutes walking around the living room. Go. Sod it, just do it. You know, and my dad's sitting there ever so graciously going, I'm ever so sorry.
It's not just the physical strain and emotional upheaval that incontinence brings. There's the financial burden too.
For him to have comfort and not mess himself more than is absolutely necessary, I buy him pull-ups. Now, it sounds small, but that costs £8 every second day. Now, when you add that up over the space of a year, that becomes quite significant. Pads cost money, electric costs money, gas costs money. It all costs money. You know, every time you put the washing machine on now, I'm thinking, oh my God, what's it going to be today? Because I keep trying to keep it under £3. I can live at £3 a day. I can't live at any more than that because the bill's going to be huge.
Professor June Andrews is a fellow of the Royal College of Nursing. She's worked in dementia care for over 30 years.
One thing that is fundamental to all of this is the culture of care in any clinical setting. And so part of the definition of the culture care is things that we tolerate and the things that we do not tolerate in this particular clinical setting. And if it's the case that medical and nursing staff and all those involved are prepared to tolerate the start of incontinence in someone who was always able to use the toilet properly themselves, then there's something fundamentally wrong with the culture. So it's not just poor organisation and it's not just lack of training in the staff. It's something that allows people to have a culture where they expect no better and where they don't try to make sure that these things never happen. The assumption that an older person who was incontinent doesn't need a proper clinical assessment from a specialist in that field is such an ageist attitude and so appalling. But it's significant as an indicator of the culture of care in the place where it's been allowed to happen.
Level 6, Regional Rehabilitation Unit. Busy, stressful and short-staffed. The hospitals we've spoken to admit patients with dementia don't always get the care they deserve. Some, though, are trying.
We're going to head up to Fielding, which is one of our older adults wards. So we have a lot of our dementia patients are placed here. Not everyone.
Dementia matron Alex Lukjanik is 18 months into the job at Northwick Park Hospital, a busy acute centre in northwest London.
No specific dementia wards. We like all our workforce to be dementia friendly and our dementia patients can be placed anywhere.
A quarter of the patients on their wards here have dementia. To help them feel more like they're at home, they've recently opened a brand new lounge.
You know, we've had patients sitting here
and say, oh my goodness, it's so quiet, it's lovely, put on the telly.
Inside, it's been decorated to look like a cosy living room. Vinyl pictures of green fields and trees are stuck onto the windows. A mock fireplace is arranged under a television. And in one corner, there's an old-style tea room with table, chairs and painted cake stands on the walls. I meet one of the patients they're currently caring for.
Hi, hello, I'm Dashi.
Right, is it?
Yeah. Who's been painting your nails? Was that something you did today?
Myself!
Oh, no, I like them. Look at my nails.
Yeah, they're a wee bit on the rough side, but...
I asked Alex what best practice looks like.
There's no one rule fits all. Best practice is to get to know that person individually and ascertain their routine at home. Do they like to have a light left on, perhaps, at, you know, in the dark so they can find their way? Are they safe to do so? Are they continent? We do everything we can to ensure that's intact on discharge, or for regular toileting. But it's about finding out what's best for the individual person.
When you're in a very busy, acute hospital setting like this, can it be very difficult, though, to offer the kind of personal care, the intimate one-to-one interaction?
Yeah, of course. It's, you know, dementia care takes patience, a great deal of patience, and that takes time. So care homes do it a lot better than we do as, you know, acute trusts. And there's a lot of progress to be made still.
The All-Party Parliamentary Group for Bladder and Bowel Continence Care has told Phylum 4 it wrote to the Health Minister Sajid Javid in April, telling him continence care is overlooked. It wants a new government-funded audit to review current practices and more specialist training. The health minister is yet to reply. Not everyone, though, is convinced that more training is the answer. Professor Jill Manthorpe is from the National Institute for Health and Care Research, the organisation which funded Katie Featherston's work. She says the problem is far bigger.
Perhaps it's more of a system problem than individuals being at fault. And I think that's where we really got to concentrate in turning hospitals into dementia-friendly places. Then I think there is issues for the way hospitals are designed. And we know that there's quite a lot of money going into hospital refurbishment and indeed some new hospitals. We've got to get them right in terms of being less confusing places and places with easier access to bathrooms and toilets. If you are in hospital, that walk to the toilet is a pretty treacherous walk in many places. We've got to think about continence at that level. And then I think we've got to take that big system issue about, do people living with dementia need to be in hospital? Can they be better supported at home in some circumstances? And equally, that they need to be assisted to get out of hospital as soon as possible. And we know that that isn't the hospital problem, but that's a big system-wide problem as well.
The Department of Health and Social Care told Phylum 4 it's concerned Katie Featherston's work has discovered continence pads are being widely used improperly. It says it's established the National Bladder and Bowel Health Project to improve continence care and has issued a practical guide for NHS staff to strive for the best possible continence care for patients. And it expects all trusts to comply with this guidance. The Scottish Government says all patients are expected to receive assessments and treatment plans. And the Welsh Government says its dementia policy focuses on person-centred assessments to ensure that the dignity of patients is maintained. The Department of Health in Northern Ireland told us every health and social care trust has a continence advice team and a review of its continence services is due to be published soon. But for Dr. Katie Featherston, the principle behind effective continence care is simple.
We really need, I think, at the hospital level to have an awareness of the importance of continence care as the foundation of high quality care, of dignity care, of humanity of care, and really put that at the centre of and the heart of delivering high quality care to people with dementia. It is invisible at the moment, but we have to give it the priority it deserves. Because absolutely, at the moment, lots of people with dementia are going home with incontinence that happened during their admission.
Until that's achieved, dementia patients and their families will continue to live with the impact long after they've left hospital.
I feel I fail at everything. I'm not good enough for Dad, I'm not good enough for Mum, I'm not good enough for my son. Yeah, I'm just failing at everything. That's how I see it. But there is no time. And there's no help. And you have to constantly respond to the one screaming the most. I love them to the moon and back. And I will do this all the time I've got breath in my body.
If this can happen to Mum, this can happen to anybody. Anybody who has dementia or mobility problems and their families who have to deal with it.
Yeah, we didn't want anybody else to go through what we'd been through as a family and Mum had got been through. We didn't want other people to have to go through the same.
I just feel that I don't really know how to put it into words about the dignity of care. I just feel like she didn't have that dignity in the end, or wasn't allowed to be given that dignity, which she should have been able to. With a lot of dementia patients, I think they just fade away and appear to be insignificant when they're not.